You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hello, everyone. This is MLB.com Extras, American League Central Edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to take you on your weekly tour of the AL Central news and notes with all the beat writers from MLB.com. In these dog days of August, we'll check in with Jeffrey Flanagan in Kansas City as the Royals continue to dominate this division. And we'll hear from Red Bollinger, who covers the Twins team, embarking on a huge make-or-break road trip in their bid to stay alive in the wild card race. And we'll also check in with Jason Beck in Detroit, Scott Merkin in Chicago, and Jordan Bastian in Cleveland. Thanks for tuning in. Away we go. And I am joined by Jeffrey Flanagan as the Royals continue their coast to the AL Central title. But Jeffrey, one element of this club that I think we've really taken for granted for the last 2 years is that dominant late-inning trio of Greg Holland, Wade Davis, and Kelvin Herrera. And it hasn't been quite as dominant in the second half of the season for whatever reason. 35 innings from those three guys since the All-Star break. They're allowing just north of 4 runs per 9 in that span, as opposed to 1.67 in the first half. And more importantly, or more alarmingly, 5 blown saves in the second half after 5 in the entire first half. So I guess just in general, what have you made of what you've seen from those three guys here the last few weeks especially? And, you know, is this a concern? This is obviously a Royals team that's in very good shape and going to make it to October, but we all know what an important presence that bullpen is for them.
Yeah, I think to a big degree that Royals fans have just been totally spoiled in the last year and a half by just how good that trio is. I mean, they were doing things last year that are just basically superhuman. I mean, you just don't have ERAs like those three guys did, not just in the regular season, but the playoffs too. So we're starting to see the fact that they actually are human beings, and they do make mistakes. And I think to some degree, especially in Greg Holland's case, he just hasn't been able to get the regular work that he needs. He's a guy that is much more effective when he works 3 to 4 times a week. And Ned's been very diligent about trying to get these guys rested and not overuse them. He keeps really close attention to their appearances. But with a guy like Greg, and we just pointed this out last weekend, I think after they had 2 straight games where they blew leads, that he's just a guy that you're just going to have to work every day, not every day, but every other day if you can, just so he's more effective. I had a stat that when he gets 4 days or more of rest, his ERA is 13.5. And when he works consistently 3 days or less of rest, he's like at 1.65. So with the other guys, it probably doesn't make as big a difference. But then again, you know, Wade Davis gave up a home run last night. He had the streak earlier this year where he'd gone 126 innings without giving up a home run, and now he's given up 2 in the last month. And again, you know, he's dealt with some back issues and has not had regular work. He's last year at this time, you know, he was a guy who was probably in games 3 or 4 times a week, and that's not been the case as they try to rest his back. And so he's not been quite as effective. So I don't think there's a big concern. I think they've just they've been so careful not to overuse them and not to abuse them that they've kind of backed off, and the guys just aren't quite as sharp as they are when they work regularly. So Ned even mentioned to this weekend that he's going to probably have to adjust his thinking there and try to get them in more games. You saw that again last night with Greg Holland appearing in a game that was a tie game in the 9th inning. Or actually, they were down by 1 run in the 9th inning, which he never would have done last year, but he just wants to keep Greg Holland sharp.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, from the outside, you could look at it as, well, the Royals have this 12-game lead. They've got this ability to do whatever is best for them here down the stretch. So they are, you know, best prepared for October. And Holland, you know, his walk rate is nearly doubled. His strikeout rate has decreased. And you're hearing a lot of people saying maybe they should, you know, give him time to work things out mechanically with Dave Island and Davis with the back. You know, should he be getting more rest? And it seems like from the Royals' perspective, it's the opposite. They need to get more work, not more rest.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, Holly's a guy that, you know, 2 or 3 appearances ago, to start the homestand out, he had probably his best outing of the year. He struck out the side against the White Sox, finished the game off by striking out Abreu. with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. People have talked a lot about his velocity being down, but I think that was earlier in the year as he was coming off the pectoral injury. He was kind of building up his arm strength again, and his velocity was, you know, 92, 93, 94, which to me, you know, there's a lot of closers out there that, that succeed with that, but people are used to him being at 96, 97. And that's where he's been the last week or two. So his arm strength is starting to build up again, and Ned's going to keep using him and keep that arm strength up. Now, you're not going to, you know, throw him out there six times a week, but, you know, I think for him, Greg even said himself, he told me the other day, he needs to, in the perfect world, he would work every other day. And you can't set that up in baseball, of course, but he does want the regular work now. So it'll be interesting to see how Ned handles this in September. He's going to try to, you know, keep them rested. But I think just importantly, too, is, you know, guys like Lorenzo Cain and Sal Perez are getting – Omar Infante just had basically the whole weekend off. So he is getting those guys rested and then getting their legs rested and not overworking Sal. You can do that when you're 25 games over 500 and 12 games up in the division. So – it's probably going down the stretch here. He's probably going to be more concerned about keeping his position players rested and ready to go for October. And also then again, making sure that his bullpen, the HGH trio, does get regular work and they stay sharp.
I am joined as always by Rhett Bollinger, and Rhett, the Twins had lost 12 of 15 before a little team meeting last Tuesday of the Rangers series, and they've since won consecutive series. You know, we've been saying this for a long time now. The American League, it's you hover around 500, you're definitively in the race, and the Twins keep hanging in there. What's been the key to getting this club going again a little bit here in the last week or so?
Well, I think one thing for sure is they played well at home all year. I think, you know, the record, they played pretty well at Target Field. So that homestand was very big for them. They hadn't won back-to-back series in a long time. You know, right now they're going on a big road trip here. Kind of the big slate here kind of coming up is going to be all on the road. That's going to kind of be kind of make or break the season, I think, is going to be this big road trip starting here in New York, and they go to Baltimore, Tampa, and then they come home only for a little bit at the road again. So this big stretch is going to be big for them right now. Coming, you know, getting that, you know, couple series win there against, you know, a couple of good teams, Rangers and Indians, have struggled a little bit, but, you know, to beat some good pitchers there definitely helped. Their confidence level, like you said, that team meeting certainly was something that kind of picked them up a little bit. They had one, that, you know, the previous homestand too, maybe didn't work quite as well. They had a little bit of a closed-door meeting in Toronto. So they've been trying to get it together. You know, this is a team that has surprised a lot by being in the race as long as they have. And they're not ready to fall out of it just yet. I mean, the thing is, it's still going to be a tough road just because, like I said, they have so many road games. And really, some other teams that might be a little bit better on paper. But as you said, right now, as long as you're at around 500, they're still within, you know, a game, two games of the wild card right now.
Yeah, I agree, Rhett. This is definitely it. Definitely has that feel of a make or break stretch for them. They're 3-10 on the road since the All-Star break going into this road trip, and it's not just that; it's also who they're playing: Yankees, Orioles, and Rays. Obviously, all teams that are at the very least in that wild card picture as well. So, big stretch for them. I wanted to, as we've done many times on this podcast, let's delve into the rotation a little bit. Because there's been a little bit of upheaval there with the Phil Hughes back injury. That thrust Trevor May back in the rotation. And I'm just curious, Rhett, you know, we talked about this with Corey Provis when he filled in on last week's podcast, but May's long-term future, it seems like it's the best option is to, you know, entertain the option of him as a starter long-term. But he had really been pitching well for them in the bullpen. This stint in the rotation, do you see it lingering beyond a couple of starts, or what's the outlook here for May down the stretch here this season?
I mean, it definitely should. Right? This is a guy that's, you know, a young guy, a rookie that had a really good start to the year and really was kind of just, you know, moved out of the rotation due to the fact that, you know, Malone was coming back at the time, Alaska was back, kind of got pushed back a little bit out of there, but fared pretty well. You know, obviously his ERA as a starter was a little bit high, but that was kind of, you know, hurt by a kind of a slow start. To the, you know, first couple of starts of the year, kind of started to figure it out there. And, you know, his first start back here was only a couple of innings just because of his pitch count reasons. But I do think that he's going to get a chance here down the stretch, maybe stay as a starter. And I do think next year he's got a really good chance to be a starting pitcher even out of spring training. I think they see him as a starter long term. He does have the stuff to be a reliever. If that was, like, it's kind of a worst-case scenario because he does throw hard. He's got the, you know, the right kind of breaking ball and the right kind of mix, even a changeup that he could be a really effective reliever if that was the thing they wanted him to be. But I think given his youth and the upside of the starter, I think they're much more inclined to make him a starter going forward. I think right now, it's just more, he got bumped out of the rotation. Tommy Malone was pitching well at the time. He ended up getting hurt now too, but just came back and also fared well in his first start back in the DL. So the rotation definitely a little bit of upheaval, but I do think that maybe late in the year, if he goes back to relief, if everyone's healthy, I do think that his future is definitely going to be as a starting pitcher.
The Tigers got back their biggest piece over the weekend, Miguel Cabrera. In fact, he rejoins a team almost unrecognizable to him, I'm sure. Dave Dombrowski's gone, and of course the changes to the roster from the trade deadline with David Price and Joaquin Soria and Yoenis Cespedes. What does he think of all that, for one, and two, how's he moving around at this point coming back from that calf injury?
Well, he hasn't really said a whole lot about the Tigers situation. I think he kind of understands where they're at. But he's also a guy who's used to winning at this point in the year and used to having something played for. I think this is his first time going through this kind of stretch since 2010. The year before they went on this run of division titles. And at that point, he wasn't coming off an injury. I think he got hurt the final week of the year that season with a sprained ankle and ended up sitting. He's a guy who's gone through a lot the last few years to try to help the Tigers to a playoff race. And I think a lot of us thought that he would be, taking it pretty cautiously once the Tigers kind of dropped back in. He says he's fine. He said he didn't really need a rehab assignment or anything like that. He wants to play. I don't think just because, for contention reasons. I think he's tired of sitting on the bench and sitting in the dugout and having to be a cheerleader. As far as how he looks, he looks surprisingly good. I think there's still a little bit of concern about that calf. They DH'd him on Saturday in Houston, the way that Victor Martinez handled first base, it wouldn't be a surprise to me if they did that a couple more times here while Cabrera transitions back. But all in all, he looks fairly good.
Justin Verlander looked pretty good his last outing, and a 96-mile-an-hour fastball on his 105th pitch. It wasn't quite that old MVP form, but that's about as close as we've seen in a while. But I saw where he almost gets offended if you call it vintage form, because he thinks this is still his true form.
Yeah, I think we saw not just the sustained fastball Verlander, but I also think we saw more confident Verlander. And from the standpoint of following this team on a day-in, day-out basis, that's more interesting Verlander to cover. It's been a while since we'd seen that from him. And really, the way he pitched the other day, he deserved to feel that way. He feels like that this is the pitcher he is. He's thrown together some outings that have kind of reestablished himself as the ace of his staff, not just in name, but in performance and giving his team a chance to win. But also, I thought I saw an upgrade in stuff. The fastball, not only sustaining velocity, but maybe even picking up a tick. As the game went on, I think if you go by the ballpark radar down there at Minute Maid Park, he started out around 93, 94, and then was pretty consistently hitting 96, 95 by the end of the game. And he wasn't afraid to use it in and out. He was. It seemed like he took a little bit off at some points, especially early, to spot on the corners. But he went inside with it quite a bit. He was willing to pound the inside against a free-swinging, aggressive Astros team that can hurt you when they connect. And he used that to set up some off-speed stuff. He dropped some curveballs in on the inside corner. And he really looked like the confident, polished pitcher I think we were waiting to see for a while.
Live from Fenway Park, America's most beloved ballpark. It says so right on the wall there. Francisco Lindor. Let's talk about him a little bit. Old Frankie Lindor. He's been terrific lately. easily the Indians' best player of the past week or so. And Saturday night in Minnesota, brilliant double play, diving deep in the hole against Trevor Plouffe. He leads all American League shortstops in defensive runs saved. That's with at least 400 innings of shortstop. That's saying a lot for a kid who didn't come up till June. So basically, this kid's 21 years old, and we're really starting to see what all the fuss was about, basically.
Yeah, I mean, in the second half, aside from some other prospect in Houston, Francisco Lindor has been, you know, one of the top shortstops in the American League, you know, let alone among the rookies. And I think it's been pretty impressive. Obviously, defensive run saved is a number that can go down, it can go up, you know, depending on what you do. But as of now, to have the most defensive run saved in the American League in such a small sample kind of shows you, you know, what he's brought to this team defensively in such a small amount of time. And it's actually the most in a season for an Indian shortstop since some guy named Omar Vizquel in 2003 when he had 10. So, I mean, this is, you know, no small feat here over the last couple months for Lindor, who has also been kind of improving by the day offensively as well. You know, there's still some things. He still has some rookie moments. Even the day that he made that highlight reel double play that was everywhere, he made kind of a throwing error on a pretty routine ball, and Terry Francona was quick to bring that one up. And the reason they've been so quick to point out when he makes mistakes, you know, along with lauding what he does so well, is they believe that this kid has not only a chance to be, you know, one of the best, but, you know, to be a great shortstop in this league for a long time. And they want to, while he's so young, kind of nip some of these minor flaws in the bud before it becomes a habit, you know. And kind of, I think what Terry Francona said the other day was, if he can make those highlight reel plays and the routine play, that's when you have, you know, a great shortstop on your hands. So that's what they're striving to get out of him. And from talking from Lindor to Lindor, and I'm sure you can attest to this too, this kid is definitely a player who definitely strives for greatness, you know, wants to be one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, he projects very well. You know, it's, sometimes in this business we do the lazy comparisons. We say, you know, hey, you're going to be the Indians' next great shortstop. You remind me of Omar Vizquel, you know, a great shortstop of Indians' past. But that really is just the way this kid just kind of carries himself and the fun he has. I mean, I do see that comparison really does jump out at you, you know. Sometimes it is that simple. You can put down a few sacrifice bunts. He's kind of been doing a little bit of everything here, especially in the second half. Urshela also defensively made a terrific play behind the bag last week, throw across the diamond to get Brett Gardner. So, geez, I mean, who would have thought the Indians would actually be fun to watch defensively? There was a time that was very much not the case.
Yeah, I mean, last year, I think what they finished with, negative 75 defensive runs saved. Yeah. And this year, in the first half, I mean, it wasn't that great. You know, they had Jose Ramirez at short, who was strong down the stretch last year, struggled early on this year. Santana wasn't doing that well at first base. I mean, there were some holes defensively on this team even earlier this year. But since they brought up, especially the two rookies, Urshela and Lindor on that left side, it's really shorted up. And, you know, the Indians have existed, I think, in around the top 10 in baseball in defense this year. And I think to go from one of the league's worst to kind of even middle of the pack is a drastic improvement. And, you know, continuing to trend upward towards being a better defensive team in the AL. And those two young guys on the left side are, you know, a huge part of that.
We are joined by the fabulous Scott Merkin. And Merk, Chris Sale was pretty fabulous himself on Sunday against the crosstown rival Cubbies. 15 strikeouts. Anthony Rizzo said he made us look silly. Was that about as good as you've seen Chris Sale?
Yeah, I think that is an example of why, you know, the Sox, hoping against hope at this point, if they get into the wild card playoff game, that they feel like they have a chance to advance. Because if you get Chris Sale on a day like that, where I think, you know, there was a little extra, even though Chris kind of played it down, but I think there's a little extra adrenaline going, playing the Cubs, trying to avoid the sweep against the Cubs, trying not to lose in the season series against the Cubs. Plus, you know, the Sox need to legitimately win every possible game they can. I think there's a little extra. But, I mean, you could tell in that first inning he was just, you know, pretty much beyond what had ever been seen before. And that was pretty good. You know, there's a guy who went, what, 8 straight games with double-digit strikeouts in a row. So, yeah, it was, there were some of the worst, and you know, this is a Cubs team. This is not the Cubs team they faced the first time around that couldn't hit at all. This is a Cubs team that, you know, had won 9 in a row, had hit the ball well the first two games of the series, had had some key hits in that winning streak against the Giants and the Brewers, and there were some of the worst swings I can honestly say I've seen in a long time against Chris Sale yesterday from good hitters, like, you know, a guy like Chris Bryant or Anthony Rizzo. Chris DeNorfi at one point swung at a pitch that hit him in the foot, spun around and fell down and struck out because he swung at the pitch. So it was just, you know, man against boys, and that's saying something because the Cubs were 3.5 games ahead of in a really good wild card race, you know, and it went 18 games over 500. It was Chris Sale's day, and it makes sense. He's, you know, one of the best pitchers, probably, you know, top five pitchers in all the game right now.
He's got an outside chance, and it's perhaps very outside, but we haven't had a 300 strikeout season since Curt Schilling and the big unit in 2002 with the D-backs. Sale could technically do it, although I guess missing that first turn through the rotation earlier this year, that doesn't help that pace at all.
Yeah, you know, he would have to have a lot of games like this one, and let's see, I think he's at... Right, no, that's true, but I mean, he's at, what, 208 right now, I think? 208, and what's he have, maybe, what do they have, 40-some games left, so... Yeah, you know, I guess it's possible. I guess you're right. It is. If he's not like this, but close to this every time, he could get up there. I would think it's more likely going to finish in the 280 or 290 range. Either way, I think he's going to end up setting the franchise record. And you know, 300 is an outside chance. So there's no question about it.
Yeah, he had that 8-start stretch earlier this year where he struck out 97 guys in 60 innings. So just do that again. That's all you got to do, Chris. Come on, man. Help us out here. We're trying to see history here.
Kind of like your days in Little League, right? That's how you were when you were playing.
Oh, absolutely. No, I was playing left out. I think I was DHing even then.
Okay.
Merck, Jose Quintana, he's, over the last 2 years, 15-21, but with a 3.45 ERA. So he's almost the poster boy of the kill-to-win movement, I guess, with that record.
You know, he's kind of the I think if you had to define him, it would be Jose Quintana quality starter. You know, I mean, he's only gone, you know, one complete game in his career, but you know every time out you're going to get 7 innings, anywhere from 2, you know, 1 to maybe 4 runs, usually in that 2 to 3 range, 7 or 8 strikeouts, and give you a chance to win. You know, the interesting thing is, very highly respected kid in that clubhouse almost from the day he came up there. I remember Adam Dunn, who has since gone on to bigger and better things. I don't know bigger and better, but different things. Just out of the blue one day when we were talking, pointing to Quintana and telling me how much he liked that kid. And I remember Konerko, when he played his last game last year, Quintana was pitching, stopped at the mound and hugged Quintana. And Robin loves the kid. And, I mean, it's understandably so, because he leads the majors since 2012 with, I want to say, 47 no decisions.
Yeah.
And there are quite a few other losses where he had, you know, 2 or 3 runs allowed, such as the game Saturday against Jake Arrieta and the Cubs. So, yeah, it's an interesting situation for the Sox, because he's a great guy to have. He's under control. You put him with Sale and Rodon, and then one more year of Danks and whoever, you know, whether it's Samardzija back or whether it's Carson Fulmer or whether it's someone else. Or, you know, he's also probably their most realistic, biggest trade chip that could maybe help you fill another area or two. So, yeah, he was a great find. The scouts who found him from the Yankee system deserve a ton of credit, and the Sox deserve credit for helping develop. Most of all, Quintana deserves credit, though, for becoming really a, you know, a frontline type starter.